Welcome to Earthly, a Clemson University podcast discussing issues of agriculture, horticulture, nature, and design impacting the world, nation, state of South Carolina, and even your home. Here's your host, Jonathan Veit.
Since the days of George Washington, the United States has been surveying farmers about their farm operations to monitor the health of the nation's agricultural industry and the security of the food supply. The effort started in 1791 when Washington wrote to farmers requesting information on land values, crop acreages, crop yields, livestock values, and taxes. Washington's survey extended 250 miles north and south and 100 miles east and west of his home in Mount Vernon, which today would encompass Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, West Virginia, and the District of Columbia. In 1839, the census became official when Congress appropriated $1,000 for, quote, carrying out agricultural investigations and procuring agricultural statistics, end quote. Now the USDA's Census of Agriculture spans the entire nation and is released every 5 years. Today on Earthly, I talked to agricultural economist Nathan Smith about the 2022 census, which was released in February. Smith is going to help us understand what the census says about the health of the nation's agricultural industry and how South Carolina is faring. Nathan, thanks for joining me on Earthly. I want to start at a national level where there are some interesting trends. Nationally, the census reports that the number of farms is down 7% from 2017. That seems a little scary, but the report also shows that farms produced $543 billion in agricultural products, which is up from $389 billion in 2017. So we have fewer farms, but higher production. What do we know about what's causing the production increase?
First of all, my pleasure to be with you today, Jonathan. You mentioned that the 2022 Ag Census showed that we had a significant decline in the number of farms, 4%, based on the numbers that you shared. And the average farm size, therefore, it increased from like 191 to 201 acres per farm, or over a 5% increase there. So, yeah, that's a trend that we have seen through the previous census. You noted that the total value of agricultural production was up significantly from 2017. That 40% increase is driven by, number one, just higher values or higher prices for the commodities, and number two, increased production. 2022, probably a pretty good year across the board in production, so increases that product that value also.
What's increasing the production?
When you look at trends in production, our row crop production and field crop production is more efficient. The yield coming out of a bag of seed is going up due to technology, and also animals more efficient in feeding animals and how we produce animals. And so that's certainly a factor even over the 5 year time period. Good growing condition or good production environment helps increase those yields too. So it was probably a combination of both of weather and increase in efficiency of production and productivity.
The average person might be asking, well, if production is increasing so much, has increased 40%, why should we be worrying about the decrease in farmland?
It's an interesting question because there is a lot of concern about us losing farmland. And so, you know, really in agriculture, land is the most fixed asset. And it's one of the biggest barriers of entry into farming. You know, the number one reason that farmers farm is to feed the world, and the number of people they feed per bushel or per animal is having to increase to keep up with demand. A population going up, population increase in projections 20, 30, 50 years from now, and losing farmland just makes that harder.
The census defines a farm as a place that sells at least $1,000 of agricultural products. What size categories of farm are generating the most revenue?
So it's definitely your larger farms. USDA breaks it down into seven categories from less than $2,500. You've got your small, your mid-sized farms, and then your large farms. And the large farms are in the category of $1 to $5 million in gross receipts to more than five 5 million. And those two categories nationally are about 78% of the value of production. We've generally used that number somewhere between 75 to 80% of the production is grown by these larger farms.
Are farms getting larger as a result of consolidation?
There's that, but there's also on the technology side, the productivity side. With new technology, it comes at a higher price tag, you have to farm more production or more acres to be able to pay for the new technology or justify the new technology. So that's the other trend.
So how's revenue divided between livestock production and crop production, and is one more profitable than the other?
So for the 2022 census, livestock was at 48%, crops was at 52%. So crops actually went up 2%. It was 50-50. And that trend has kind of fluctuated back and forth by 2% on either side, depending on the year. You know, some of it might be the livestock industry contracted. We've been in a contraction phase for cattle. Poultry has not necessarily.
Are there any new crops that U.S. farmers are producing? Maybe something that's gaining an international or national market that farmers didn't produce in the past?
I don't know if there's new crops. We're actually importing more in looking at trends. For most of my career, we've been a positive trade balance between exports and imports on agricultural products, but we're now a negative trade balance because of specialty crops produce coming into the U.S.
Nathan, could you explain the import-export imbalance? It seems to me that I go to the grocery store and I can get any fruit or vegetable I want any time of year, and I'm wondering if that has anything to do with it.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. You know, fruits and vegetables are seasonal. And so it used to be you would find certain vegetables or certain fruits in the produce more abundant when they're in season. But now the shelves are full. And right now they're products of Mexico and Peru. And that's why we're importing more from other countries, whether it be Central America, South America, and other places to have availability all year long. We've seen that trade balance shift in part because of that. Other reasons have been trade. China, with their fast growth, was a big trade partner in agricultural commodities. In the previous administration, we saw some tariffs go in between the two countries that impacted agriculture. Some of that has shifted the trade balance too.
The census also shows that farms are still family businesses, and the average age of farmers is continuing to increase. Talk about the implications of those numbers for us.
Okay, yeah. You have farmers of over 65 make up 38% of the U.S. producers, and between 35 and 64 years of old, it's 53%, and then 9% less than 35. We don't see as many people getting into farming, and so that drives that age up. But also farmers, it's a way of life for them, so a lot of them farm as long as they can. And so they tend to, if they may slow down more than they actually retire. And so when they retire, they're not necessarily replaced 100% by a new farmer. They may have a successor in the family. There's also several farms we've worked with that don't have anybody, a successor, either somebody in the family to pass it on to or that's interested in passing.
Nathan, my understanding is that succession in family farming is an issue. It could be a complicated matter, and that Clemson has some programs to help farmers plan for how they're going to pass on their farm. I'll talk about that a little bit.
And we offer programs related to that. Whether it be a county program where we can come in and do a couple of workshops on succession planning. We also have materials available there through our website. Or you can contact your local county extension agent, and they'll know who to get in touch with to look at resources and whatnot. But basically, we're not lawyers or anything. You know, can't do your estate plan, but we can help farms and farm operations and getting the right questions to ask going into that, and also putting together the plan in terms of how what your goals are and what things do you need to be thinking about and looking at in terms of succession planning. And all that depends on it. They're all different, you know, because you've got sole proprietorships, you've got partnerships, you've got corporations, and all of that requires a little different, little different details in how you do it. We've seen some of those farms transition in the last 5 years, probably more than previous years.
Do we know why?
Different reasons. One is just the aging population, like you said, generational transfer. The flood of 15, I think, may have spurred some to look at, I don't want to give up any more equity than I gave up that year. Or I think the other is some of them are forced to look at it because of the development going on around and the value of the land. When you look at the difference between the really fast-growing areas of the upstate, Horry County, Charleston, those areas where land values have just shot through the roof, that's driving part of it too.
Let's talk more about South Carolina. What's the sense it's saying about the trends in South Carolina? Are we in line with what's happening nationally?
Yes, from a loss of farms and losing acreage in South Carolina, yeah, we're similar to the national trends, which has gotten the attention of folks. Of course, that attention was there before, but now we see the numbers where we have lost some significant farmland, and the numbers of farmers have decreased. The question you asked earlier about the value of production between livestock, poultry, and crops, South Carolina differs than the U.S. in that actually we're heavier in the livestock poultry. 64% of the value of production comes from livestock and poultry because we're a heavy poultry state, and crops makes up 36% of the value. And that's probably also, we use the term grain deficit state. Because of poultry, we have more demand, or we don't produce enough grains or feed to feed, so we import corn and soybeans in order to feed the poultry and livestock. That trend's a little different than the rest of the country. We also saw agritourism as a category go up.
Talk a little bit about what agritourism is. A lot of people don't know.
Yeah, so agritourism is a way to, especially for the small farms and those that are located in more populated areas, to bring in additional revenue or alternative revenue. And when you think about agritourism, it's basically the public or consumers coming and to the farm instead of going to the farmer's market or buying it at the grocery store or going to the restaurant, whether it be you pick or, you know, we've had those, and that's been a growing trend, but it's trying to capitalize on local foods. Research in my field of agriculture economics generally show that people are willing to pay a little more for local food. They want to know where it came from and that it supports your local farmers. Activities on the farm that are centered around education as well as selling direct to the consumer would be considered agritourism. And so we have the Ag and Art Tour weekends in June around the state of about a dozen counties or so that basically invite the public to come and visit their farm and see how production happens, get up close to the animals and also see some of their production and might be interested in. And they've tagged it also some artists at these visits and stops. So those are examples of agritourism. Corn mazes, festivals, you know.
The U-Pick phenomenon has always been a little bit funny to me because I know that farm labor is one of the most expensive parts of farming. And so instead of paying people to harvest your produce, you're inviting people on the farm to do it for you and charging them probably twice as much.
Yes, that's an innovative way of addressing a labor shortage. And you're definitely right. Labor is one of the biggest challenges for farmers today.
What crops are we still growing in abundance in our state, and what are their values?
Okay, so our largest crops in terms of value are corn. Corn is still an important crop, and soybeans. Just to give you a reference, when I was in school back in the 80s at Clemson, we probably had around 2 million acres. Now we're about 350,000, 400,000. So how many acres are grown has changed. But corn, soybeans, cotton is still important, grow over 200,000 to 250,000 acres. Peanuts has become a more important crop over the last two decades, grown about 75,000 to 1,000. We've gotten over 100,000 acres of peanuts, but it's a high-value crop. Those four crops together come pretty close in terms of the value of production. And then fruits and vegetables as a whole category are peaches, leafy greens, melons, and strawberries, and the like. When you combine them as a whole category, they're number two. Corn's generally been number one. Cotton and cotton seed, it's generally been number two, and we're a big broiler production state. But we also have a good sizable number of turkeys, too. Hay is a big one, too. When you look at a map, where like a remote sensing map, satellite image of where what they're, you're looking at upstate, where they got a lot of pasture for cattle.
Is there an explanation for the increase in peanut production over the years?
Peanuts used to be grown under a quota system. In other words, it was supply control, similar to tobacco. And that was basically limited to areas that had base, and South Carolina didn't have a lot of historical peanut production. So we were growing 15, 20,000 acres maybe. And that was on the North Carolina border and South Carolina-Georgia border down between Aiken and Savannah. And they eliminated the quota program in the 2002 Farm Bill. And so we've seen production move down from Virginia and North Carolina down to South Carolina. And more recently, a peanut shelling plant has made a commitment to build a plant in South Carolina. So that encourages a few more acres too.
There's been a big push for farmers to begin growing what are called specialty crops.
Yeah, so we do see that trend in the census where a growth in specialty crop sales and in production. Actually, South Carolina is number five in leafy greens production in the U.S. nationally. So we're in a good place, you know, in terms of production and delivering to the Atlantic seaboard, you know, up and down the Atlantic coast. Farmers looking for alternatives to just grain production. So, you know, that specialty crops is an area where I think South Carolina has potential to even grow more in particularly with the where population is growing and meeting demand.
Is agriculture expanding to other parts of the state? I know that urban farming is something that has been promoted both by Clemson and by the Department of Agriculture.
We're expanding in terms of new and beginning farmers, but when you look at the number of farms, it's actually the upstate, you know, Greenville County, Spartanburg County, Anderson. Anderson's number one at over 1,500 farms, and Spartanburg's number two at over 1,200 farms. Greenville has 920. Lexington County, 822. So those are all counties, you know, that are fast-growing counties in terms of population.
Nathan, talk a little bit about the pressure and the costs that are being put on farms right now.
So one of the things they ask in the census is related to farm economics and production expenses. Nationally went up 30% between 2017 and compared to 2022. When you're looking at your expenses going up almost a third, that increases the amount of money you need to produce the crop. And it also creates a bigger hole when there's a loss that's harder to climb out of when those adverse production years come.
Nathan, there's been a lot in the news about how dairy production and dairies across the nation are sort of disappearing. You know, there's a lot of people who are drinking almond milk these days instead of dairy milk and oat milk instead of dairy milk. How does that look for South Carolina?
We've seen a pretty significant transition in the dairy business in South Carolina. So in the census, in terms of milk sales, we've seen that drop about a third between the 17 and 22 census. In terms of just large commercial dairy farms, we probably lost 45% since I started here 8 years ago, or came back to South Carolina 8 years ago. That's just reflective of what you said.
Are there any other downward trends?
Yeah, so tobacco is obviously a downward trend. More than half of tobacco operations no longer grow tobacco from the last census.
From the last census?
Yeah, from the 2017 census, we had 117 operations with tobacco, and the 2022 was 48.
Wow. And is that, once again, a demand problem where people are just, they're not smoking as much?
That is. And it's also where they're buying their tobacco from. They're importing more tobacco.
Well, there's some good news in South Carolina agriculture. You mentioned the diversity of the products we produce. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, one of the things that I think the Ag Census highlights for South Carolina is the diversity of our production. And geographically, when you look at the state, you know, we go from the mountains in the very top west part of the state to the coastal plain and to the piney woods, I guess you'd say, even down towards the coast, and the different topography. But it also means that we have the ability to produce a lot of different things due to weather and land resources. It's been a little while I looked at South Carolina, and you know, soil is classified by type 1, type 2, 3, 4, down to 7. And we have a pretty good percentage of prime farmland or type 1, type 2. We may not have the depth of topsoil that maybe the Midwest has, but we have productive soils that when help them out a little bit, we can be productive. So, you know, when we put in irrigation, we can produce the same yields or better than maybe in the Midwest. I think with our growing population and demand in the East Coast, we're in a good place for specialty crops to grow and the higher value crops like that, you know, in terms of our weather. And we have our rainfall compared to some areas of Texas and California, which are big ag states, you know, that helps too. So yeah, we can maybe be a little more nimble or resilient in terms of our production and also try to shift and pivot to different commodities as the market demands.
Nathan, you're part of the Extension Agribusiness team. Talk about what that team does.
So the agribusiness team is made up of county extension agents and extension associates and specialists like myself who look at the agribusiness side, or whether it be marketing or production, economics, farm management, financial and farm management, risk management. We do some programming related to farm stress and mental health. Farming is a risky business. A farmer has to be a good producer. And today, if they're not a good producer, they're not in farming anymore. But they also got to be a good business person. What the team is there for is to help put the numbers or look at the bottom line and strategic planning and strategies for making better decisions or making business decisions, whether it be business planning or business succession transition that we talked about earlier, record keeping. So we're working with folks who've never farmed before, new and beginning farmers and ranchers. Got a very strong program. We work with people all the way up to the large commercial farms, but also the industry. Provide enterprise budgets for folks to use as a template to look at their own operation or maybe even look at doing something they haven't done before. In the lending side, I like for farmers to use those to look at their projections from year to year. And then on the marketing side, where we do an annual outlook conference for South Carolina, we do the Clemson income tax or tax schools every year for the state. We have a South Carolina Center for Cooperative and Enterprise Development, and we collaborate with South Carolina State, and South Carolina Department of Agriculture, and Small Business Development Centers. So those are just some of the programs.
Well, I will have links to all of those programs in our show notes so that listeners who want to learn more about them can. Nathan, I just want to thank you for coming on today and talking about the census. It's a lot of information. It's difficult to digest, but you helped us, and especially as it regards to the state of South Carolina and the agricultural industry in our state.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Earthly is a production of Clemson University and can be found wherever you get your podcasts. Listeners can find archived episodes of Earthly, transcripts, and learn more about our guests by visiting clemson.edu/earthly.